We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to Cash Considerations, the Chicago Bulls podcast. I'm Ricky O'Donnell. I'm with Jason Pat. Jason, what's going on?
I'm doing all right. How are you? I'm about ready for this ulcer break to come up here.
You know, now that the Chicago Bulls are one of the five best offensive teams in the NBA over this recent stretch of games, I think that, everything's looking up for this organization finally.
Oh, yeah. They're turning everything around. Otto Porter Jr., the missing piece. The Bulls are definitely a high-flying offensive machine now. They're definitely going to be amazing next year going to the playoffs. Totally right. Right?
Everything's fixed, Jason. Everything's all good. No, but the Bulls coming off another loss last night at home against Milwaukee. Bulls falling 112-99 in a game. It looked like the Bucks just totally mailed in. The Bulls were around late in the fourth quarter in that one. But besides for Giannis just basically running up and down the floor and dunking at will, the rest of the Bucks just weren't that good. That's the Bulls' second straight loss. It comes off the back of the revenge game of Jabari Parker and Bobby Portis. That was on Saturday when Jabari was just dunking the hell out of
that. That was crazy.
First seven makes. This was his first seven baskets in that game were dunks for Jabari. He looked really spry getting up and down the court. It kind of just confirmed to me just how out of shape he came into the season originally, which should be totally unacceptable, especially for a free agent, coming into a new team, trying to prove himself at that point in his career. It's too bad because the player Jabari Parker is right now, while still like deeply flawed and probably tough to win with, he's just definitely a better player than he was when the Bulls originally signed him. I think that, he proved that in his game against the Bulls on Saturday. He looked pretty good for Washington. It'll be fun to watch Bobby and Jabari as they go on with the Wizards, and we can talk about that a little bit more later. And then Friday, the Bulls played arguably, one of their best games of the year, beating the Nets 125-106. So these are the first three games the Bulls have played with Otto Porter Jr. Otto Porter coming to the Bulls in the deadline deal with the Wizards for Portis and Parker. Three games for Otto so far. He's definitely had some nice moments. He's been shooting the ball pretty well from three. He was 4-for-5 against Brooklyn in his debut, 2-for-5 against Washington from three, 2-for-4 against Milwaukee from three. So, he's putting up 18 points in his first three games. What do you think of Porter so far? And I guess just what are your initial impressions of him, Jason?
I think offensively, it's kind of been what you expected. Just like really solid, like nothing flashy, but he's been shooting the ball really well. Like that Brooklyn game, like the whole offense was just on fire that game. Like basically everybody played really well in that game against on the road against the Nets are a solid team this year. The Nets, I think they'd beaten them like three other times and they blew them out. Like put up 125 points. They won by almost 20. And Porter we talked about this after they traded for him. Just a solid player, not going to put up huge numbers, but guy who stretches the floor, really opens things up for the offense. A versatile player. We've saw against the Bucks that Boylan was using him at center, which I wouldn't really suggest doing all the time, but probably ever. But I guess with Cristiano Felicio not being a good matchup for the Bucks five out offensive times when Lopez is out. Boylan wanted to go super small, but Porter can play the three, can play the four. I guess if you really want to go small at times, he can play the five occasionally, but just in general, but really solid offensively. Defensively, he's been okay. There have been some times where he's gotten blown past on drive and stuff, so he hasn't been like a lockdown defender. But in general, I think he's really helped the offense. I know after last night's Bucks game, I looked up just like some on-off stats. Small sample size here, obviously, but Bulls have something like a 115-0 rating, and Porter's like 100-some minutes so far. So just really good. You can just tell like the spacing in general has just looked a lot better, and just having another guy who can really stretch the floor and is a threat. Because when you had like Chandler Hutchinson out there, or whoever obviously even playing at small forward, like just guys don't really respect their outside shot. So, but with Porter, you have to respect his 3-point shooting. So it just really helps open up the offense for everybody else.
Yeah, I think that to me he hasn't looked very good defensively at all. Like, he looks like stiff in his hips, which is one thing that worried me when they acquired him, because he has had hip injuries dating back to his rookie year. They flared up again this season. Now, it hasn't prevented Otto Porter from being, one of the better small forwards in the NBA each of the last couple of years. You look at the RPM numbers. 2 years ago, he was fourth among small forwards in real plus minus, the three guys ahead of him: LeBron James, Kawhi Leonard, Kevin Durant. So that tells you all you need to know. Last year, he was actually ahead of LeBron and Durant. He was second in real plus minus among small forwards, only behind Robert Covington. This year, you look at the numbers, and he's down at 15th. He's still having a pretty big impact offensively, but defensively is where he slipped in those ratings. I think the eye test backs that up.
Yeah,
he just doesn't look like this rangy, multi-positional defender that he was earlier in his career. To me, that's going to be the ultimate test of the Porter trade. If he is compromised defensively in terms of, his fluidity and his motion, suddenly I think, that contract does look pretty outrageous if you're only getting sort of an offensive player who's efficient and effective, but within sort of a narrow scope of the game. So Porter definitely needs to bring it defensively. I'm not too worried yet. In fact, I'm really encouraged by his first few games with the Bulls, because, you just see the impact he has with this roster. To me, Porter's one of those guys who would help out literally any team in the league. Like, hypothetically, yeah, if the Bulls get Zion and they become the Zion show, a year from now, Porter would be great there, because he's just going to be able to give you more length defensively and spot up on the perimeter. And I think he has like a good sense of spacing too. There are a couple times in his first three games with the Bulls where, like, off an offensive rebound, he's just spacing the floor properly, and he's been able to get some open looks because of that from three. LaVine has even credited him. He's saying, Porter doesn't even know the plays yet, but before, defenses were like loading up on the elbow, so it was hard for LaVine to drive. Mm-hmm. Now he has some more space out there. So I think Porter's been really good. Another thing LaVine said about Porter is that he thinks he didn't get to show everything he could do in Washington. Obviously, during Porter's, last few years with the Wizards, John Wall was at the controls there, and him and Beal dominated so much of the offense. Wizards fans for a time really wanted to see what a more empowered version of Otto Porter would look like. I really hope he gets that opportunity with the Bulls, because that's what the rest of this year should really be about. We know what's going to happen when LaVine and Dunn are at the controls. I'd like to see a little bit more of Porter in a playmaking role, which I think he's done decently up to this point. He had 4 assists against the Bucks last night, had a couple against Washington. So I've been really encouraged with him this far. I just hope that he gets back to where he was defensively when he was one of the better defensive swingmen in the league.
Yeah, you mentioned the playmaking stuff. We definitely did see that yesterday. I mentioned how they had him playing like center for a bit on that second unit, which the second unit was not good. But like, when you're backup point guards or whatever, it's like Shaq Harrison and Ryan Arcidiacono, you might as well give Porter a chance. Because I'm pretty sure that there were times, from what I recall, that LaVine, Dunn, and Lowry, I think, were not on the floor. Even if Lowry's on the floor as well, like, And if Levine and Dunn are both out, you might as well give Porter those opportunities. And even when he had a point as well, where even when Robin Lopez was playing center, that him and Lopez were working some pick and roll, Lopez setting some big screens up top and high pick and roll, and Porter doing some stuff off the dribble and doing some playmaking. That was nice to see, because that's one of the things you talked about. He really hasn't done that much. We really haven't seen him in that much of a creator role in the past. It definitely is worthwhile giving him a chance to see if he does have that extra juice to his game, because that would really help. Because I don't think he'll ever be like a ball dominant like scorer guy, but if he can at least have just be a second or whatever tertiary playmaker role, small forward, that'd obviously be really huge for the offense. In terms of your defensive concerns, totally agree. I know Stefano, who we always reference here, was really pointing out recently just some of the times where he would get blown by, and you mentioned it's kind of stiff, not able to guard one-on-one, getting beat there. I'm not I'm not totally concerned about that yet. I just feel like the Bulls in general are terrible defensively, or they are in the season. Like, they've just been really bad. Like, I hope next year, I think, will be something really interesting to watch. If he can maybe get healthier over the summer, if he comes back fully healthy, more committed to the defensive end, hopefully we see more of that on defense.
Yeah, I really like Porter in general, though. And, you know, the more time passes, yeah, the more I'm just, like, wildly in favor of this trade. Like, obviously not a perfect player. Someone made the point on Twitter, it might have been Kevin Farragan, you know, reading an article from someone else, that he's more of like a last piece than one of your first pieces.
I think Zach Lowe said, I think Zach Lowe and like Kevin Pelton both were commenting about that, like how he maybe not be able to like really raise like a team that's good, but like, oh, that's really good, but like, or a team that's bad. He's not going to like bring a bad team up to like being like really good, but like as a good team, he can help like put them over the top, I guess, because he can just do a lot of stuff pretty well, even if he's not like super great at anything.
Yeah, I agree with that. And, you know, too, who knows where the Bulls will be a year from now. I think after the embarrassment that has been this season, you're looking at an offseason where they're going to get a high draft pick. If they don't get Zion, I think they're probably going to try to make some noise in free agency. They have about, what, $18, $19 million left to work with this summer. That could mean a playmaking point guard like Ricky Rubio. Who knows? It could mean D Rose. It could mean, you know, any number of different options the Bulls have in front of them in free agency. But the more talent you add to the mix, I think the better Porter is going to look. And then remember, that deal is going to be a really big expiring deal, you know, into next season, the year after that. So I always think they can flip him too. Like, you look at all the superstar movement, or all just the movement in general, in the NBA these days. Like, the trade deadline never used to be like this, man. What were there, 57 trades made, you know, the week of the deadline? I think that was an NBA record. So
I can't remember what the actual number was, but there was, I think it was like the most trades in a really long time. I know there were like maybe 14, 50, something in the teens, like on deadline day itself. And there was obviously some real big ones, just a lot of movement, because teams are feeling like they can go for it. Teams looking for shakeups, like whatever. Just definitely a lot of movement with more players like trying to take situations in their own hands, trying to change spots, like movement all over the place.
Yeah. So I think, you know, in that type of world that we live in now, like, no one should be saying like Otto Porter's definitely going to be the small forward of the future. Otto Porter's definitely going to be here the next time the Bulls are competing for the playoffs. Maybe he will be. But I think just in general, like, he's the type of guy who would just help basically any team with his skill set. We'll see if he has anything more left within him too, because, you know, the Bulls should give him some more opportunities to attack a little bit. They should give him the opportunities to create, to pass. So I'm really excited about Porter. And to me, he just makes the Bulls so much more watchable. Now, you couple that with the way they've been playing recently since they got him, Boylan finally letting him move up and down a little bit, the Bulls playing to their strengths, letting him attack in transition. It's just been a much more watchable product since Otto Porter arrived.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. The game they lost to the Wizards, the defense was terrible, but they were getting buckets, and they're clearly making more of an effort to push the ball up and down the court, whether it's Levine, Lowry's been pushing the ball up and down the court. Now, let's transition from Otto now to Lowry, who had a rough game against the Bucks, at least shooting wise. He was 6 of 21, but he still had 20 and 17, had 3 assists as well and a couple blocks. But before that, just lighting it up. The Wizards game, he had 20, 11, and 4. The assist is a really nice touch there. He shot 9 of 17. In that Brooklyn game, he had 31 and 18 on 11 of 18 shooting. The New Orleans game, he had 30 and 10 on 10 of 19 shooting. The Hornets game, He had 30 and 9. So he three straight 30-point games to start the month. 20-point double-doubles the last couple games. Even against the Bucks, he was really aggressive. He missed a bunch of bunnies around the rim. He got stuffed at the rim twice by Brooke Lopez and once by Giannis was in there as well. And Giannis made him look pretty bad on a few occasions. But Giannis makes everybody look bad. Just side note, watching Giannis is just like an incredible experience. Just absolutely incredible player. Just dominating, imposing as well in the game. But Lowry took the challenge. I believe Boylan said that Lowry asked to guard him. And while it didn't go well, like Giannis is a freak. He does that to everybody. I just like the aggressiveness that he's shown lately and just some of the different stuff he's been doing offensively. There was a play in the game yesterday where he caught the ball outside three-point line, pump fake with Giannis on him, pump fake, drove around Giannis, and then finished a nifty finish off the dribble over Brooke Lopez. And just we've been seeing the aggressiveness driving to the basket. He's been shooting threes like as usual. He can get into the free throw line a bit more. The playmaking, just like it seems like he's completely unlocked his offense, like the all around offensive game that we've been looking for. Because he did struggle a bit coming off that injury, but now we're just kind of starting to see the whole package there. And I think that's something that Bulls fans should get really excited about. I had a Finnish fan email me. I'm not sure how to say this name, so I'm sorry. Juha Olila emailed me from Finland, home of Lauri Markkanen, just asking us to talk about what we think Markkanen's floor is, where we think his ceiling is, where does he need to get better. And I think we've seen lately some of the stuff that he has been getting better at in terms of just playmaking, getting to the free throw line, aggressiveness off the dribble. So what have you made of some of the stuff that we've seen from Lowry lately? And even Boylan letting him do a bit more in terms of handling the ball, bringing the ball up.
Yeah, court. The way Boylan was using him since Boylan took over, which coincides, Markkanen played one game under Hoiberg before Hoiberg was fired. The way Boylan was using him was completely ridiculous. I mean, they were dumping him the ball in the post. It seemed like they wanted to establish him as more of a traditional big man than the type that thrives in today's game. And that's Lowry's skill set. So, you know, you look at his stats in December and then in January, and it wasn't very encouraging. He shot 42% from the field in both of those months. He only averaged one assist per game in both of those months. So while he was scoring the basketball a little bit, he wasn't getting to the foul line. That was only happening 2.5 times a game. He wasn't blocking any shots. He wasn't making anyone around him better. That has all started to change over the last 5 games since the calendar flipped to February. You saw in the game against the Nets, he had 2 great stuffs in the first quarter against Shabazz Napier, where in the first one, he just totally rejected him. It looked like he was playing basketball with like a 12-year-old. So I like seeing that from him. I think, you know, making some of those big plays defensively can get his confidence up on that end. Also, finally started getting to the free throw line, 6 attempts per game on the month from the foul line. That was mostly lifted by a Charlotte game where he went 13 for 13, but he was attacking against the Bucks too. Got to the line 7 times, made all 7. That was on a night where his 3-pointer wasn't falling. He was only 1 for 7 from 3 against Milwaukee, but I think Markkanen has looked really good. I love how aggressive he is going to the basket. Now, there was a sequence in the Bucks game on Monday where I think him and LaVine were running the floor. LaVine hits Lowry with a bounce pass. Lowry goes up to slam it, and Brooke Lopez rejects him. They get the offensive rebound, and then Giannis packs him. So he got blocked twice on the same possession. What I like, though, is that Lowry didn't seem to be too deterred by it. I mean, he's going to keep attacking. He runs the floor really hard in transition, even though you don't think of him as, you know, the most athletic guy on the team. But, you know, and you got to be encouraged by the 17 rebounds, too. Lowry's a tough dude, man. He's mixing it up. I like him quite a bit long term, and he's good right now. There's no doubt. I think that he's only going to get better as the Bulls continue to add more pieces. You know, the more Lowry we can see as a ball handler, I think the better. He looks so comfortable putting the ball on the floor, taking 2 or 3 dribbles to get to the basket. He can either hit you with a fadeaway from there. He'll try to dunk on you. He can try to contort his body to finish at the rim. So, you know, the whole goal for Markkanen is that, you know, he's a great catch and shoot guy. It's all about diversifying his offensive game from there, right? And then, you know, long term, it's going to be how does he play off Carter? Because I think a lot of teams would take someone like Markkanen and make him a 5 defensively and then try to surround him with really good long ball pressure defenders and another like weak side shot blocker, some good rebounders. With Carter being the only other definite building block for this team moving forward. Markkanen's going to have to play the four. So that's really one of the biggest shames of this season is that we don't get to see those two guys play off each other towards the end of the year. Yeah. I'd like to see some Markkanen at the five while Carter's sideline. We have seen it a little bit.
I was going to say, they have been doing some five out there with smaller lineups and Lowry at the five. And I have not looked at the numbers yet exactly, but I'm pretty sure that they've been kind of torching it. I mean, just in general, the offense has looked much better. And I think we have kind of seen some of that. I mean, because especially now with Porter, if you play Porter at the four and you have Lowry at the five, and then you have like LaVine, maybe like a guy like Wayne Selden, who's been pretty solid. Like that's a pretty interesting offensive lineup. The defense has been problematic. They definitely do need upgrades there to help defensively if Lowry would play a lot of the five. But there definitely has been some good signs there in terms of just that five-out offense and having him play the five. At least, I think
Lowry can be an all-star. Multiple times.
Oh, yeah. Though. I mean, you just look at the numbers. Yeah. You look at the numbers right now. I mean, the last five games, he's putting up 26 and 13. Like, even on the season, even with his slow start, he's putting up 18 and 9. His true shooting percentage is like 56, 57, which is a little above league average, I believe, or at least right around there. And this is after just obviously a huge setback with the elbow injury. But he's finally starting to get in the groove. And with the Eastern Conference not being the strongest, I know that there have been obviously some bigger trades to get guys over in the East lately, but I definitely think he has all-star potential. I don't like in terms of like, can he be the number one guy in a title team? I still have to see a lot more for that. Can he be like top 10, top 20 player? I need to see a bit more than that, but like definitely, I feel like all-star is a definite something that he definitely could be, maybe even as soon as next season or in the next two seasons. I don't think
that's got to be the hope for the Bulls. It's like they still need one offensive initiator, one creator to like lift everyone else up around them. I think we've been talking about that all year, but Markkanen is a really good piece, and it feels like we haven't talked about him enough this year, in part because Boylan was using him in an idiotic way, in part because, you know, he was hurt at the beginning of the season, and the Bulls have just been such a damn train wreck ever since Boylan took over. But it's a shame we didn't get to see Markkanen in a second full year under Hoiberg. I think that would have been beneficial for him. But, you know, moving forward, it's not like he's really stagnated. He just hasn't made that sophomore leap, I think, that, you know, we expect guys who have good rookie years to make. But you look around the league, like Jason Tatum's been worse than he was last year. I feel like Donovan Mitchell's been a little down in Utah.
He's stagnated,
so it's like development in general isn't always going to be linear. You look at a lot of the other sophomores this year. De'Aaron Fox is the one guy who has notably taken a big step up. But like Lonzo hasn't been very good. Josh Jackson looks bad. Dennis Smith's already on his second team. So I think, you know, Lowry was a great pick. And if we're looking for reasons to be optimistic about the Bulls moving forward, I feel like it begins and ends with him and Carter.
Yeah, absolutely. Because you mentioned just like that whole, and we'll talk about this more later. We're going to take some listener questions about the whole, just like they need a high level creator. And I think we saw again last night, the Bulls offense struggled a bit. And when Lowry was off, like LaVine had a nice game, but Chris Dunn was, and we've talked about Chris Dunn. I've hammered home that I'm really not that high in him. He was 1 for 9 yesterday, just more problems. And something I found really interesting about yesterday's game against the Bucks, while he struggled, I mentioned this on Twitter that Stacey King was there was a point during the game when Stacey and Neil were talking about like the Bulls young core looking forward. Stacey King did not mention Chris Dunn. Like he mentioned Lowry, mentioned LaVine, mentioned Wendell, mentioned Chandler Hutchinson, mentioned Otto Porter, did not mention Chris Dunn. John Paxson has not given his stamp of approval on Chris Dunn. And I just think it's blatantly clear that they need to make a major upgrade in terms of like their primary ball handler there, because like we saw LaVine do a bit, we've seen him do some playmaking, but in terms of like being like your primary initiator who can really effectively set up everybody on a full-time basis, I'm not sure he's that guy, because I just don't know if his decision making is that good. But I feel like it's totally clear that just Dunn is not that guy. Again, just did not get to the free throw line again. 4 out of 5 games this month, no free throws. He was 1 of 9 from the field. There was a play yesterday where Stacey called Dunn out for turning down a wide open 3-pointer and dribbling into a mid-range shot, which was the only shot he actually made, which is kind of funny. But Stacey was like, dude, you got to take these shots. It was like Lowry drew in like 2 or 3 defenders in transition, found Dunn for a wide open 3, and he didn't take it. Like that's just the kind of stuff that can't happen. And And it's happening over and over again. I feel like it's just clear that while he's not a bad player, he had some decent games and the offense has been running better lately. Just like in terms of the Bulls taking it to the next level and being a good offense against actual defenses that are trying and that are locked in, like they're just going to need that big upgrade there in terms of a primary initiator. And that will help everybody. That'll help Lowry. That'll help Zach take a little more of a backseat. That'll help Wendell. And that'll help Otto Porter Jr. as well. So that's definitely something we're going to have to see moving forward. If it's not done, it's going to have to be somebody else. And you mentioned in terms of they might throw money at a point guard in free agency. We could probably talk about that a little later, but definitely something.
Yeah, it seems like the Chris Dunn era already is on life support. But I do worry about that a little bit because he's not going to be super expensive next year. He does get a little bit better each year. He'll be 25 next season. He does have some obvious, you know, strengths, I think, especially on ball defense. He is a bit of a gambler. Which Boylan went on this big rant about how they don't like steals because steals happen when you're like reacting outside of your scheme. He wants to play a conservative scheme and have guys play tight man defense as opposed to, you know, getting out in the passing lane and trying to play steals. But lately for Dunn, I just feel like every time he has the ball in his hands, he's either going to dribble it off his foot or like throw a terrible pass or brick a wide open jumper. It's kind of funny. He said after the Bucks game when he shot 1 for 9, he was like, you know, I'm getting to my spots, but I just got to hit the shots. Well, no shit, you're getting to your spots because your spots are the least efficient spots on the entire floor. Like opposing defenses are going to be happy to yield 18-foot jump shots to you, Chris Dunn. Even though he did hit those shots at an above average clip last year, it's not what the Bulls need to jumpstart this offense. So, you know, I do think that given everything Paxson has said publicly, just given the way the team in general seems to think about Dunn, I think they're going to move on from him. I wouldn't be totally shocked if Dunn, you know, had a career year next year and maybe made the Bulls look like they were a little bit impatient. But at the same time, it's like, do you see the ceiling for Chris Dunn to be, a really good primary creator on like a strong playoff team? I don't. So if that's the case, it's probably best to move on from him. But, for all the talk of point guard being the strongest position in the NBA, there's still a lot of teams that could use great point guards. You look at what's going on in Phoenix right now. Obviously, they need a point guard. That's going to be another team that's in the mix for John Morant at the top of the draft if the Bulls don't end up with him. The Knicks still have nothing at point guard. Dennis Smith is a good-looking young player to an extent, but I still think that that's, you know, a position that they're going to need to focus on. Obviously, Orlando needs a point guard, so
they're banking on Fultz. They're taking a gamble on Fultz, but besides, I mean, they can't rely on that. And Orlando's been rolling out DJ Augustine, who actually has been pretty good this year, like relatively, just like for his, like he's been pretty solid for him. And then like Jaren Grant was their backup. Like that's real rough. Like the Bulls have a bad point guard situation. Like DJ Augustine and Jaren Grant is also real
bad. I think like Dunn is definitely the young piece who they are most willing to give up on right now. I mean, I think that's just like clear as day at the moment.
Yeah, Zach Lowe even reported in his post deadline piece that Dunn was basically available. That like if anyone wanted him, the Bulls would have been willing to work out a deal there. And I don't know if he's definitely going to be gone. I think we talked about this last time. We're like, I'd be fine with Dunn back next season. But I just don't think that they can like bank on him being their guy in the future. Like they definitely need to make an upgrade, whether it's John Morant, whether it's signing a veteran point guard, whether it's adding both. Like, I guess if they added both, they probably would trade Dunn for help somewhere else. But like I said, I wouldn't be opposed. I'm not totally giving up on him. I don't think he has to be gone, but I think it's pretty clear that they probably need to.
Jason, did you watch the Bobby Portis, Jabari Parker revenge game, and what'd you make of all that?
I was at a bowling alley doing some bowling, drinking a little bit, but the game was on, so I did have one eye on the bowling and my beers and another eye on the game. And it was entertaining, like ridiculously high scoring. There was no defense being played. Like you mentioned earlier, Jabari Parker clearly out to destroy rims, destroy the Bulls. He dunked on Lowry. He had like 6 or 7 dunks. I know Bobby did not play quite as well. He was probably a bit too amped up. Because besides, I think Bobby's played like 3 games now with the Wizards. He had like 30 in the first game. I think he had like 6 threes in their last game. Not as good against the Bulls, but he still had some big buckets. I think he had some buckets to help close the Bulls out. It was just kind of funny to see both those guys kind of taking it to him and obviously enjoying it in the process. I know Jabari threw a little shade at Boylan as well, which it kind of made me like, I mean, sure, like some Boylan shade I could never really turn down, but also like Jabari, dude, you got paid $20 million this year and you came into camp out of shape. So it's like, I don't even know who to side with here, but it was entertaining, and also entertaining that they got the video tribute, which the video tributes I feel like are given to just about anybody these days. Do you think that the Bulls would have given Jabari a video tribute if he was on a different team and it wasn't him?
I don't know.
Portis
maybe because he's from Chicago.
That's what I thought. Maybe like there's obviously no reason to besides that. He played half a season. He was benched. He was bad for most of that time. And then he was benched for like a couple weeks. Like it would have been the weird, most awkward like video tribute ever. But I don't know either. I figured they just did it. They were both there together, so they might as well just give both of them some love. Since doing one for Portis and then not one for Jabari, it might have been a little awkward as is. But yeah, it was still definitely an entertaining game to watch. And like I said, Jabari played one of his best games of the season.
When Portis got traded, it was a bit odd for me to see the way the fan base, the Bulls fans reacted. It's like, do people really feel the same way about Bobby Portis that like I feel about Taj Gibson? Like he was never on a good team. He kind of had this like, I don't want to say fake tough guy, but it was like his like machoism was very in your face. And that's not super appealing when you're not playing hard defense. You're not really elevating the value of anyone else around you. It's like, tough for the sake of being tough or something. Now, I did really enjoy his Twitter rant. Like, you saw Jeff Van Gerten tweet, Otto Porter made his first three field goal attempts as a Bull, and Bobby Portis quote tweets it and says,
oh, yeah.
I mean, my first six is a wizard, LOL. So I thought that Portis, like, coming at the Bulls on social media was really funny. He was asked about that after the game against the Bulls, and he said he was just having fun, that he has nothing but respect for the organization. So I don't think there was any, like, too much ill will there other than Bobby Portis just trying to hype himself up as he always does. My favorite moment of this though came from when they asked Boylan about Portis. Cody Westerlund tweeted this out. He said, Jim Boylan says Bobby Portis will quote, become a wizard with all of his heart. So that's all I can really hope for out of Bobby Portis, that he becomes a wizard with all of his heart and can find some joy there, because it wasn't happening in Chicago.
Yeah. Oh, and Portis obviously took the trade just really hard. He was always Mr. Bulls across the chest and all that kind of stuff. And the fact that he got traded like right before a game like was pretty wild. So, I mean, I was never the biggest fan of Bobby Portis. He's some of his goofy like flexing and all that, like getting wild while the Bulls were like losing or in the midst of a terrible season last year. Like sometimes it's a bit over the top. But I mean, the guy seems like a really good guy. He's a solid player. Like, I'm definitely not gonna hate on Bobby Portis. I'll be paying attention to his career with the Wizards, whether it's with the Wizards or elsewhere.
We're halfway through, Jason. We should do some ad reads.
Let's do it. Let's a word from our sponsors, and then we will take some questions from some of our fans. All right, guys, we've got an announcement to make. Blue Wire is teaming up with Harry's to make sure our listeners are shaving comfortably. I always love a good shave. Please go to harrys.com/bluewire to save $10 on a value trial set, which includes a 5-blade razor with a lubricating strip and a trimmer blade, a rich lathering shave gel, sounds great, and a travel blade cover. You get all of that for just $3, and it's shipped right to your door. Enough of these cheap razors, so it's totally worth trying Harry's. Harry's has fixed shaving by combining a simple, clean design with quality and durable blades at a fair price. Harry's founders were tired of paying for razors that were overpriced and overdesigned. Sounds about right. Harry's bought a world-class blade factory in Germany that's been making quality blades for over 95 years. Join the 10 million who have tried Harry's and claim your trial offer by going to harrys.com/bluewire. All of Harry's blades come with a 100% quality guarantee. If you don't love your shave, please let them know, and they will give you a full refund. That's pretty nice of them. So again, make sure you go to harrys.com. That's harrys.com/bluewire to redeem your razor for only $3. Ricky, take it away.
Life can be stressful, Jason, especially when you're a Bulls fan.
Yeah.
Getting life insurance shouldn't be. That's why there's Ethos. Ethos is a modern kind of life insurance that's super fast, incredibly affordable, and very uncomplicated. At GetEthos.com, there are no medical exams for policies covering under $1 million. No hours of paperwork or meetings with pushy representatives. It only takes 10 minutes to apply, Jason, and you can rest assured knowing you've taken steps to protect your family. In most cases with Ethos, you can have that peace of mind for less than a cup of coffee per day with no hidden fees. Having life insurance can free you from stress. Getting life insurance shouldn't cause it. Discover how uncomplicated life insurance can be at Ethos. Get your free instant quote and submit your complete application in minutes. Just go to GetEthos.com. That's E-T-H-O-S, GetEthos.com, GetEthos.com, Jason.
And now, back to some Chicago Bulls talk. And like I said, we are going to take some questions from some of our wonderful fans on Twitter. I'm just going to kind of roll here. I liked a bunch of them. We got a pretty solid response here. I'm just going to kind of roll. I don't think we really need much of a outline here. So I'm just going to go with the first one I got right when we – this morning, first question from Alan K. at Alan A. Kleinerman. Now that the Bulls have traded for Otto Porter, taking up that max cap space, they don't have any more. What do you think is the best case free agency play for the Bulls? He asked one scenario with Zion and one without. Do you think they go after point guards that you kind of mentioned earlier? Do you think a guy like Eric Bledsoe would make some sense? What do you think about free agency now that the Bulls have around about 19, 20 million in cap space?
Yeah, I think one guy who might be decent to look at is Jake Lehman. Like, to me, if you're signing a free agent, you want guys who are about to be hitting their prime, especially with this team, more so than like overpaying some big names. So Jake Lehman has turned into a pretty damn good player for the Trailblazers this year. It seems like all he does is catch lobs and hit threes. So he's someone who could probably mostly suited for the four in this era, but he can also play some three. I think he'd give the Bulls some lineup versatility. Obviously, Portland's got a lot of big contracts out there already committed to role players like Evan Turner, Myers Leonard, Mo Harkless makes some money. So I'm not sure exactly when all of those contracts run out, but you know, if you give Lehman a decent offer sheet, I think it could be hard for them to keep him. And that would be someone I would look at in the offseason. Also, if you're thinking of another name, I believe Jeremy Lamb is an unrestricted free agent,
yes,
too.
Yes, I was thinking of him.
He's having a pretty good year for Charlotte. He's someone who could give you minutes at the two, provide a little more defensive stability ahead of, or, you know, alongside Zach LaVine. Reggie Bullock, who just got traded as well, he's an unrestricted free agent this summer. I think he would be a pretty good spot-up 3-and-D guy. So, you know, those are the type of names I'd be looking for. And if you're looking for a bench big, Jason, how about Taj Gibson or Joakim Noah? Joakim Noah just had a huge game for the Grizzlies. I never thought we would see this type of stat line out of Joakim Noah again in his career, but he just popped off for 19 points and 14 rebounds in a game against the Pelicans for the Grizzlies a couple nights ago. I don't think Noah really has much left in the tank. Gibson has a little bit more left in the tank, but I would definitely take either of those guys, and especially if there was any way to get Felicio's contract out of here, that would just be so much more enjoyable.
I also wonder if they're going to look at bringing back Rolo, because like, it doesn't seem like they want to buy him out because Paxton apparently hates the buyout process, and like, he's been playing really well lately. Like, maybe they'd try to bring him back for cheap as their bench big. I'm not snatching, because clearly I feel like I said, they got about 19, 20 million. I feel like it would probably be better to split that up among a few players rather than throwing a lot of money at maybe like a second tier point guard. I mean, they could, like I said, Eric Bledsoe, they could throw him a lot of money. They could throw money at, I guess, Ruby. I think you mentioned Rubio is a free agent, but like, I feel like I'd rather just kind of split that between like a point guard and then either they need a backup big. So they'll have that cap space. Plus they'll have like the room exception was, I'm not sure how much that's going to be this summer, but I think that's something like 4 or 5 million. And then they'll obviously have minimum contracts. I feel like I'd just rather probably add up the depth there and then, maybe, I mean, and see where that goes, like, depending on who they draft, instead of overpaying somebody who like a second or third tier player.
Yeah, I mean, Patrick Beverly is a free agent. Terrence Ross is a free agent. Elfrid Payton's a free agent. So, I mean, there's definitely some buy low guys they could go after who, you know, are a cut below the known names like Rubio or Bledsoe. I'm going to throw one more name out at you. What do you think of Malcolm Brogdon? Now, that would probably take a pretty big offer sheet to get him. He is a restricted free agent. The Bucks have to pay a lot of people this summer if they want to keep this team together. But, you know, Brogdon,
he's solid. He can shoot. Like, I'm not sure about his, like, actual creation. I think I just saw Kevin Farragut actually tweet about this. Just as an off-ball, I guess, three-point shooter who can do a little bit. I feel like that does kind of make sense because I feel like they either need a guy who can just really dominate the ball and, like, really take – like, a really dynamic player who can really score and, like, pass, or they just need an off-ball threat three-point shooter. Like, Chris Dunn is neither of those. So I guess Brogdon will probably fit into that kind of role. Like, maybe it's not as – ideal as like a dynamic as you would really like, but like I feel like if the price was right, sure, make it work. Like I feel like one of those Bucks guys might be ahead for the taking, because I don't know if they're going to commit big money to both Bledsoe and Brogdon, even though they obviously play both of them pretty big minutes. So that would be at least an intriguing thing to go player to go after. Let's move on to the next one. I think this one will be interesting for you. From at Greek Bulls fan. He says he would trade Zion Williamson for De'Aaron Fox, which I think sounds absolutely crazy. As good as De'Aaron Fox is, he says he knows he underestimates Zion some, but he loves De'Aaron Fox, thinks he'd be the Bulls point guard of the future. But so then his actual question is, which guys would you trade Zion for? And like, I guess just like, would you trade if the Bulls got the number one pick, who would you be willing to trade that for?
Probably Giannis. And then after that, I don't really know, man. Like,
would you trade for try putting together that offer for Anthony Davis?
No.
I guess this is like you worry about him leaving? Like,
especially given where the Bulls are at right now, given where Davis is at in his career, I'd rather have Zion. I think Zion is going to be like the face of the entire league, and I think that he's only getting better rapidly. And just like the demeanor with which he plays, his impact defensively is so big. He sort of views himself not – he doesn't have, like, this big ego that you would expect someone in his position to have. So I think Giannis is – or I think that Zion is just tremendous. And, like, I tweeted recently that I think Zion's a better prospect than Luka Doncic. And I had Luka as number one in all my mock drafts all the way up through the draft while covering that for SB Nation. So I, like, literally wouldn't trade anyone for Zion. That's how high I am on Zion. I could end up looking like a total idiot. But I mean, Giannis is one guy I would probably trade for him.
Hey man, go in, make that play. Yeah, I mean, from what I really can't answer this as well as you, but from what I've seen of Zion, I mean, he's just absolutely ridiculous. Like that block he had this last weekend, where he went from under the basket and blocked a 3-point shooter in like a second. I mean, the guy's an absolute freak. And if he gets like any type of shooting game,
he's already made huge.
He has been shooting better for sure from what I've seen.
He's bringing the three in every game now, basically.
He's
a shooter.
Just like watching Giannis last night, just like completely dominate on both ends. Like Zion's obviously a bit different in terms of just like his body type, but just like the fact that he can, the athleticism, the dribbling, the skill set at that kind of size. Like I feel like you could kind of think. I don't want to compare to Giannis, but just the ability to take over a game like that, just completely dominate both ends of the floor. You give him the ball and you get out the way, and just like a freight train running at you, like just so strong. Like it's Zion. Yeah, Zion looks amazing. Just clearly better than anybody in this draft, and I would definitely have a hard time trading him for anything else than a proven legitimate superstar who's probably like under contract for several years.
Hey, I said that Zion is Giannis with strength instead of length. I was getting marked ruthlessly on college basketball Twitter for saying that, but
there you go.
I'll stick with it.
All right, moving on. From our friend Stefan Noh, if you swapped Mike Budenholzer and Jim Boylan, how many games would the Bulls and Bucks win respectively?
Oh my God, Stefan is way too good at this. That's just a great question. So how many games did the Bucks win?
They won like 44. I mean, they've been around like low 40s the last couple. Like, I feel like they've been such like a disappointment. Like, we've been waiting the last few years for them to break out, and now they're finally. They have like 42 wins, and they're on pace for 16.
They're 42 and 14 right now. I think that they would probably be the fifth or sixth seed in the East with Jim Boylan. You know, the Nets are 29-29. They're the sixth seed. It's like the way that Budenholzer coaches that team. It really looks like they're playing 2K out there. I mean, Giannis, he's basically just holding down turbo and up and running toward the basket and dunking every single time. The floor is spaced so pristinely. Signing Brook Lopez for $3 million probably goes down as one of the great bargain free agent signings, maybe of the decade in the NBA. He's been that good for them, remaking himself into a stretch five. So everything about the Bucks, I feel like, happens because Budenholzer just knows how to leverage their talent on both ends of the floor to maximize everything they got. So it's an interesting question too, because it really puts the microscope on like, what is the value of coaching in the NBA, which has been debated for a long time. I remember when Bill Simmons wrote the Book of Basketball, there was an entire chapter on how coaching doesn't really matter. We always view basketball as like, well, if you have the best player is always going to win. To an extent, I think that is sometimes true, but you know, basketball is not that complicated of a game. It's a pretty simple game, all things considered. You still need to put your best lineup combinations out there. You need to come up with ways to get your guys playing to your strengths. And Boylan definitely hasn't done that, and Budenholzer has to basically a historic level so far this year for the Bucks. So I'd say with Budenholzer, where are the Bulls? I don't think they're fighting for the 8 seed, especially given their injuries. I mean, the Pistons are 26 and 29. They're the 8 seed right now. Obviously, that's not super inspiring out of them. But I do think the Bulls would be significantly better. They definitely wouldn't be in the Zion race. And we'd be looking at a team that's, you know, at least in the mix for the 8 seed, sort of where the Magic are right now with 25 wins.
Yeah, maybe low 20 wins, low 20s, maybe. It was the injuries, especially at the beginning of the year. Like, as good as a coach's butt is, like, the team that the Bulls are throwing out there with Hoiberg, which was like LaVine and Jabari and like Wendell is their best, like, that's just a hard team to win with. So like, they were going to start the year pretty poorly, probably no matter what. And then, but then compared to the Boylan era, you would hope they'd be better than, I think they're now 8-25 under Boylan. Like, you would hope that they would at least have maybe like four or five more wins there. So I would probably peg them at around like 20-ish. Right? Yeah. Makes about sense. Yeah. We're moving on. Let's try to go like rapid fire for some of these. From at Shawnene 11, can you win a championship with Zach LaVine as anything more than your sixth man? I will quickly say I think so, as long as you have the right players around him.
Yeah, I mean, win a championship is pretty tough. To me, LaVine's probably got to be your fourth best player, which would pigeonhole him in a little bit more of like a scorer's role and not ask him to freelance too much outside of that. But, you know, you look at it, he's already the Bulls' third best long-term prospect behind Markkanen and Carter, I think, because I'm really high on Carter. So, you know, add one more guy, hopefully, in this draft, and, you know, you could create a scenario where LaVine is your fourth best player. I'm not totally out on LaVine in general, but, man, like, his mental lapses defensively, everyone knows about him, but they like pop up every single time you watch a game. Like, I just tweeted out a video of him getting backdoor cut badly by Bledsoe. He also failed to rotate on a corner three by, I believe, Bledsoe late in that Bucks game that helped ice it for Milwaukee. It's like, dude, just focus a little bit, Zach. Just focus, because it's not effort. It's not talent. A lot of his defensive shortcomings come from focus. And you know, maybe if he was asked to freelance a little bit less offensively, it would help him out there.
I agree. From Stephen Taylor at Torch02, would you like Luke Walton if he gets run out of town by the Lakers?
Yeah, I think Walton would be good because, what, he's got some experience developing young players at this point, working with LA. He has the Lakers playing super fast. I think they're fourth in pace this year. They haven't been taking a lot of three-pointers in terms of their attempts per game, but they're just a brutal shooting team in general. I mean, the Lakers, they're shooting as a team like 68% on foul shots this year. They're not a good three-point shooting team. But I think, you know, in general, you want a young coach who can begin to develop your guys and to have them play to their strengths offensively. So I'd take Walton. I think that would be a solid hire.
Yeah, I know some Lakers fans aren't happy with him. I know he does have some rotation issues as well. I was watching the Sixers game the other day, and he had a lineup out there in like a close game in the third quarter without LeBron, without Kuzma, without Ingram, and things just went belly up. I know I have a Lakers fan friend who complains about Walton, but I feel like I think it would be an upgrade. And like you said, working with the young guys, they seem to like him. Just like coach, anyone, when you get thrown into the LeBron thing, when you have LeBron and a young team and like some other weird fitting parts, like, Luke Walton might not be perfect, but he's in a tough spot. So I wouldn't hate Luke Walton either. Here's an interesting one. If the lottery goes side, this is from William Martin at W underscore M underscore Martin. If lottery goes sideways and the Bulls somehow end up outside the top three or four, would you still just take like whatever best player available? Seems like a lot of guys are in that area. Or would you try to trade back and maybe try to get another asset, another pick or two?
I mean, if someone would offer you a good package to trade back, I think that I would be down with that. To me, even after Zion, like 2 through 8 is so fluid in this draft. And, you know, there's definitely going to end up being good players. Like, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if someone like Kevin Porter Jr., who's a guard for USC, who's barely been playing for them because he's had some injury issues, he was a team suspension. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up being one of the better players in this draft class. And right now, he might not even be a lottery pick. Look at Grant Williams from Tennessee, PJ Washington from Kentucky, two guys who are playing big man roles at the college level. If they can transition to more of, you know, a wing style in the NBA, I think that they could be really good. So, I would do that trade. If they could trade back, pick up another pick. It's like, because the Bulls, they don't really understand the way the league works now where everything is so fluid in terms of assets. It's like, I would be looking to wheel and deal all the time. And the Bulls never make trades like that. But if you, you know, if you get even the third or fourth pick and, you know, you're not in love with one of these guys, if you're staring at Romeo Langford and you just don't think that, you know, that's someone who's going to elevate the rebuild, I would totally trade back a few spots if you could pick up an extra first rounder.
Yeah, just the way that you've talked about this draft and just the way that the talent seems like so evenly like spread after once you get past like those top three guys, for you guys, that sounds about right to me. A few more here before we got to wrap up. Here, this is Donnie Seals at D Seals. The Bulls front office has shown a pretty good ability to draft. However, their ability to recognize talent, whether it's players or coaches, develop and construct a roster is severely lacking. Do you think lottery picks can reach their full potential on this team given the current system, organization, whatever that is in place?
That's a big picture question. I mean, like, maybe if they get someone like Zion, I think that it would just change the whole outlook of everything and that everything would suddenly fall into place. But if they don't, if they get someone like Ja Morant, even if he's the second pick in the draft, and it's gonna, you know, take a lot more infrastructure to develop him, to turn him into a winner, someone who's playing in the Ohio Valley right now, as talented as he may be. He's so skinny. He's 175 pounds. I mean, that's just going to be a steep learning curve for Ja Morant. And it will require the type of infrastructure the Bulls have yet to show so far. They definitely need a better coach. That's the first step. I think that, you know, Paxton and Foreman both should have lost their jobs a long time ago. But as long as they're in place, you know, it's going to be the same shit we've seen from the Bulls for the last 15 years in terms of how they run this organization. So can the lottery picks develop? I mean, talent always wins out. If you have talent that shines bright enough, it can happen. But the Bulls certainly are not, you know, gaining any edges in terms of the way they run their organization.
Yeah, they certainly could do better in terms of maximizing the talent. This isn't really going to be a question, but I think it's kind of funny because I was actually tweeting about this yesterday from Eric Scolaro. He mentioned this at Tuft Skerfuffle. Why the hell did the Bulls never pick any of Fred's ISU players, and especially Monty Morris? I was tweeting about Monty Morris last night because I feel like there was a lot of jokes about him, the Bulls taking him because of Ames Mafia in 2017 when they sold their number 38 pick. He went, I believe, like 50th or 51st, and he's been killing it with the Nuggets. He's having an incredible season. And he would be probably the Bulls' best point guard right now on the roster. So it's, I was just kind of amused by this comment just because I was talking about Monty Morris last night. It's kind of a shame that they didn't take a chance on him, even though we would have probably given him nothing but scorn and jokes for taking an ISU player.
Yeah, totally. Monte Morris is killing it this year. He's shooting 50% from the field and 44% from three. At the college level, he was a guy who twice broke the NCAA record for assist to turnover ratio, and that's translated too. He never turns the ball over, 0.6 per game so far for the Nuggets this year. He's also, you know, just a good consummate floor general. So Monty Morris would have been awesome, and it's a huge indictment on the Bulls' scouting ability that this was a guy playing for the program where they apparently have so many connections, and they still didn't even look at him.
And yeah, they didn't have anybody on their board at 38.
Right up, Jason.
Yep. Last few here, I feel we could probably kind of combine a few of these, talking about some of the lesser players on the team from Frodo, at Frodo TL. He says, of all the non-core Bulls, who do you think has the longest future / best future with the team? Like Ryan Arcidiacono, Wayne Selden, Hutchison. I guess I'm trying to think of who else would even, I guess TLC we could throw in there. Also, we had another question from at Rock D's blog asking if the Bulls will keep Wayne Selden. And one last one from Lowry Markkanen's burner. I know he's always talking to us on Twitter, and he's a good Bulls fan who's always, talking to us. He asked us about Arch Diacono, who seemed like he played better under Fred. Why do you think he's kind of gone back to being not that good? So I guess just questions about like Arch Diacono's future, Wayne Selden's future. Do you have faith in Hutch, TLC, those kind of guys? Do you think those guys can be decent long-term pieces, or do you think they're just kind of there?
I like Selden. I'd bring him back for sure. He's been shooting the hell out of the ball. Through the Bulls, 54% from three in February so far. Obviously, he had 4-6 against the Heat in one of his first games here, but he's continued that hot shooting. So I would keep Selden. I've always liked Wayne Selden's game dating back to his days at Kansas, so I would choose him. I'll throw it to you for Archie Diacono. What do you see out of him right now, and do you think that he's someone who's going to be around for, you know, more than next season?
I don't know. I mean, the guy plays hard. I know, like, the advanced stats really like him. He's a solid enough shot. I feel like it just at this point, he's probably just naturally just kind of regressing after a really nice start. Like, as, like, hard as he plays and as, like, solid and as smart of a player is, he's just... the talent just isn't quite there. So I feel like it's kind of a natural regression. I feel like he's a nice guy to have as a third point guard. Like, I don't know if the Bulls really look to upgrade a point guard. Like, I don't know if there will be a spot for him. Like, I certainly don't hate him. I think he's at least he's proven he's an NBA player and he belongs even at the end of a bench. Like, I do not want to play him big minutes. Like, you don't want to trust him with big minutes on an actual good team. I honestly have no idea if he'll be around that long. But at least good for him that he's really kind of at least made his mark in the league and shown that he's a guy who'll play hard, play smart for you, and hit some open threes when given the opportunity. And have you liked anything from TLC? I feel like he's active, but he just like isn't that good. Like he tries hard, he's aggressive, but he's just not good. Is that what you've seen?
I want to believe, but it seems kind of stupid too at this point. But I mean, if they could bring him back on a super cheap contract next year for, you know, the minimum, I would do that. I think.
I think the most they can offer him, I think, is something like $2.5 million because his qualifying or his team option, fourth year team option, was declined.
Yeah.
So like whatever, it would be cheap anyways. And like I said, I don't think anyone's rushing to pay TLC anything more than the minimum at this point.
Yeah, but I wouldn't totally write him off yet. But I don't know. Like, he's going to have to stop just showing, like, flashes here and there and actually start having a positive impact on games, which he has yet to do at the NBA level.
For sure. All right. Final question right here. This is from Rob Niski, Wisco.Rob. What will the Bulls' new identity be once everything settles TF down? Once it settles the fuck down? What do you think is ultimately going to be like when they're actually good? What do you think the identity of this team will be, should be, whatever?
I think they're so far away from being good that we can't answer that in earnest yet. Like, a lot of it's going to depend who they walk away with in this draft. Right now, they kind of have the makings of a team that could go either way in terms of being an offense first team or a defense first team. So I don't know. It's tough to answer that question. It feels like to me the Bulls are still so far away.
Yeah, I mean, definitely, obviously, they're 13-44. They haven't really shown that they can really do anything very well yet. Like, you asked, like, the office space guys, what would you say you do here? The Bulls really haven't shown that they can really hang their head on anything. They've shown some better things offensively lately. Can they do that against really good against good defenses, good teams? I don't know. Like, there still definitely is just a long way to go where they can prove that they can consistently hang their head on something. They can go to it when they really need buckets, like, and then they know they can do it, and especially and the other end as well. Like, they've never shown that they can consistently stop teams and play good defense. So, and there's just a lot of there's probably going to be a lot of moving parts. There's going to be, we'll see if they get a new coach and a new culture comes in there via coach. We'll see, like you mentioned, we'll see what they do in the draft. We'll see what kind of players they add in free agency. There's just a lot that still has to change, a lot that has to be settled first before I think this team can really establish an actual identity and take a big step forward. But I don't think it's totally out of the question that could happen as soon as next season. Like, there are some things in place here, but they definitely, a lot still has to come together and a lot has to go right for that to happen.
I totally agree.
I think that's going to be all for us today. Thank you, everybody, for all your questions. We'll have to do this again, especially as the season goes on and we desperately try to find stuff to talk about with we go into this final part of the season after the All-Star break. The Bulls do have One more game on Wednesday night against the Grizzlies at home. That's a very winnable game. The Grizzlies just traded Marc Gasol. They've been slumping for a while now. So that is a game the Bulls could win going into the All-Star break. And then they don't play again, I think, until like the Friday after this weekend. So there's going to be a long time off without Bulls basketball. So I guess just enjoy All-Star weekend. All that stuff. Please go listen to other, if you're interested in listening to other podcasts, please go listen to other podcasts around the Blue Wire Network. We got a ton of them, ton of good ones out there. We've talked about the Lakers ones, Laker Film Room, the new Pelicans ones, In the Know. We just added a Bucks podcast. The Bulls played the Bucks. We just added a Bucks podcast called Eurostep, which I love as a Greek guy. The Euro, I'm a big fan of Euros, and obviously Giannis is awesome, so that should be really good. We got good Warriors pods, we got good Cavs pods, so a lot of great podcasts around the Blue Wire Network, so please do give those a listen, especially during this All-Star break when there's not as much going on. Please do that. So Ricky, I guess we'll probably talk again soon, probably after the All-Star weekend. Maybe we'll talk about what happens there, if there's anything fun that happens. Even though the Bulls have anybody there? They probably have Lowry in the Rising Stars game. Is there anybody else from the Bulls taking part in All-Star weekend?
I'm not totally sure.
Yeah, I've hasn't even really like crossed my mind because the Bulls have been so bad. I'm pretty sure Lowry's there, but besides that, I think it's nobody. But besides that, everybody enjoy the All-Star weekend, and we will talk to you guys next week. This has been Cash Considerations from Jason.
I'm Ricky.
Take it easy.